Let's begin.
Welcome to Build an Agency, a podcast where we talk about the ups and downs of entrepreneurship, growth tactics, building businesses, and the events that affect your company. Let's jump right in. Welcome back to the podcast. I'm sitting here in the studio with Attilio, and we're on episode 9.
What up, dudes? Welcome to episode 9, like Travis was saying. We got some pretty cool things on the plate, actually. I'm pretty pumped. We were just reading through a couple articles, and we had some cool slash dumb stuff. I think it's kind of dumb, in my opinion. But we had some dumb stuff happen this past week, and also some pretty exciting stuff.
But first, a brief celebration that this is technically our 10th podcast. As we did start with episode 0 because...
The hidden episode.
The hidden episode, which is terrible, by the way.
Nah, I'm totally looking forward to looking back on it at, like, podcast episode 1000 and just like, wow, episode 0, that was brutal.
Well, as we get better at this and as maybe we tell more funny stories or we become, you know, better entertainers on this thing, maybe for, like, episode 100, which I'm hoping for at episode 100... we do a recap of the last 100 episodes,
some cool snippets or something.
Well, I remember, Bad Christian did that for their 100th episode. They took like
Gary Vee did it too, except it was like his Daily Vee, I think.
Oh, did they?
For 101, it was like episode 101, I think. And he had cool snippets and like just really good. Yeah,
for sure. That one was like fan made or something, which was super dope.
Super cool. Super cool. I mean, I can already tell that we're like becoming better at communicating just by being on this podcast. And I think we're also being a little like more confident and we kind of understand the flow and sort of the things that we want to present in these podcasts.
Well, I think
we aren't saying like ums or us as much.
An important distinction to make is you and I are talking into the microphone as if like there's not a microphone in the room. Like, we have these kind of conversations all the time, just like this. And at first, when you put a microphone in front of us, it felt a little weird. But like now we're kind of like just having a regular conversation about our week with a microphone in the room. And it's just, you guys are truly getting like a behind the scenes, like look at how Attilio and I actually interact.
And like are running our stuff sort of.
Yeah, I mean.
And hopefully the advice that we could provide for some people as well.
Like this, I mean, this is authentically who we are.
Yeah.
So it's awesome to start to see that coming out in the podcast now.
Plus, it lets us mull over like a lot of ideas in general. So
yeah, some things have actually like some things have come up in the podcast like organically, and we've gone on to execute on those. So it's kind of interesting. It's almost like a recorded brainstorming session that we throw out onto the internet for y'all to enjoy.
We hope you enjoy.
I hope you enjoy it.
Well, we've only had one good review so far, which means 100% of our reputation is flawless.
So, oh my gosh. Dude, that's crazy.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm loving this stuff right now.
Happy 10th episode, bro.
Yeah, dude, thanks, man. Pop up some bubbly later.
For sure, man. So like you said, we had kind of a crazy week again. Like,
it's always going to be crazy though, right?
It's always crazy, but I don't know. I feel like the last 2 weeks we've kind of run into a little turbulence, but
a lot of turbulence.
No, but it's all good.
Unique events, I think, is what it is. And I think it's part of just us growing in general and us doing things that are kind of out of our comfort zone and tackling problems that growing businesses tackle instead of tackling problems that, you know, a static business. Because say we didn't do our HubSpot partnership a week or two ago.
Yeah.
All of a sudden we would have just had like a huge expense lifted off our plate. Or say we didn't start putting a lot more money into some of our lead pipelines these past couple weeks. Mm-hmm. You know, our financial situation would be a lot less turbulent. But we decided to, you know, go heavy on these extra pipelines and kind of double down into the HubSpot area and more mid-size and large companies. So, I mean, with that, you know, with the turbulence, we've also seen some good, let me turn that off, some good.
Who scored?
Dude, I don't know. It was ESPN. Michael Bradley catches Mexico keeper off the line to score 33 yards out. And give the U.S. 1-0 lead in the sixth minute.
My God.
But I think it's women's. I don't really follow women's. I didn't even know soccer was playing right now, but that's okay.
But yeah, so we're going through some growing pains. Like we're taking some financial risks with some, they're moderate risks with big payoffs. We're definitely out of our comfort zone this month for sure.
Which means we got a bust lump to hit up those sales, which we've been doing like crazy this past week.
For sure.
Past 2 weeks, honestly.
Dude, so what is going on today or this week? What happened this week in sales for you?
Actually some huge plays. When you actually make the decision to just get after it, it's amazing what can happen when you start pulling all your strings, when you start actually trying to make those plays for yourself. Having the confidence and knowing that you need something or need to get something done, almost like a high pressure. It's not like we're under crazy pressure right now, but almost like a high pressure scenario where I guess we would be pressuring ourselves to just do better. It's amazing what can kind of come out of it. And these past couple weeks, we've been able to lock in some really good meetings with some mid-sized companies around here, namely some banks and some big dealerships, some car dealerships. And we've been working on pulling in like the largest, what are they? We've been, it's the largest privately owned insurance company this side of Dallas. So in kind of like the North and West Texas area, which is pretty huge. That'll be reeling in sometime soon. Hopefully we'll see what happens. And a lot of it just comes out of, you know, networking, knowing people, not giving up on your outlets and on your ins for a company, and just waiting for the best to come through for it. So these next couple weeks, we have some really key meetings that I think will be transforming literally probably how we run the entire company. Yeah. I mean, what do you think? These meetings are pretty huge. I mean, between like Vista, between Rieger, between, you know.
I mean, I think it's interesting because our sales focus is almost pivoted really towards like mid to large size businesses, more so than like the smaller businesses that we've like accumulated over the past.
Even though we can still handle them.
Oh yeah, we can still do small businesses, but being able to juggle less clients that are paying more money because they're accessing more of our services, I think it's gonna be better. I would rather have less clients that are paying more than more clients that are paying less, simply because you can go all in on their campaign and you could know it intimately. And like, you know exactly what to do. You know every single nuance of it.
Right.
Like, I think when you're, if we get into a situation where we're running like, you know, 30 to 40 smaller campaigns at one time, like it's going to get really convoluted and hard to keep up with everything that's going on for every different business and all their different KPIs. And
right.
So
plus, the workload for a small business is just so small that it almost doesn't merit having like a person focus on it heavily. So like literally in our business model for small business, like doing technical work for small business owners, one person can fulfill literally like 30, 40, 50 small business like orders essentially a month, which is kind of crazy because that means that if you're a small business owner and you're paying us, the attention is split amongst you and 29, 39, 49 other people. So it almost makes more sense to go more all in, more like single sourced for a company, because then they get to learn you better. Mm-hmm. So this past week, one of our larger clients actually wanted to do kind of an upsell situation with us. I think this is kind of like a good little transition into that.
Yeah, absolutely.
They wanted to do like an upsell situation with us where we provide content for them, and specifically like written content, blog content.
Okay.
And we fulfilled it, right? We do a lot of like keyword research and optimization. And then of course we have a certain amount of, I guess, content word count that we include. And we do competitive research for our content. And when we delivered it to them,
they weren't sure
what was going on.
Well, and we come up with four subjects. We create the titles that are influenced by all the keyword research that you guys do. Mm-hmm. And then we send those titles off, right, to the to the client. So they approve the titles, which the titles are supposed to be very transparent about what they're going to read and very clear on the expectations of the exchange between the reader and the content provider essentially. And so they approve these subjects, and then what happened?
I mean, that's really it. We wrote it up for them. I mean, they're meant to be socially engaging as well as informative, right? Mm-hmm. And so when we delivered the content, they had one of their higher level personnel check out the content, I guess, and try to, like, quote unquote, approve it, right?
Yeah.
And they decided that they didn't want to use our content and that they would just buy canned content.
Explain what canned content is versus what we provide.
So canned content is just, it's kind of how it sounds, canned, right? So it literally, like, comes out of a can. So imagine it is just a generic bit of content that could be shared with many other people. This is like, it's like saying one can of Coke is like the next can of Coke, right? What you get inside of your can of Coke is what you get, right? And that can of Coke is standardized with everyone else's can of Coke. So if you're going to go buy a can of Coke, you're going to get Coke, right? And so it's just generic content, so standard content.
So there's no keyword research done.
Right. They don't check out the competitors and what they're doing and what kind of content you'd need to top over your competitors. They don't make anything necessarily socially engaging or make it shareable. We do a lot of internal linking. We do a lot of external linking to build credibility for the piece. And so canned content is fundamentally different than our content.
So if I'm selling canned content and I write up a piece for, you know, a real estate company, can multiple real estate companies buy the exact same blog? So you could be buying a blog post that your competitors are also using on their blog too. Like, so it's not a unique piece at all.
It's not a unique piece. It's also, honestly, it's a waste of money. If you ask me, it's a waste because you spent the money and it's going to sit there and all it's doing is providing content for your website when you need so much more out of content than just content itself. Right. So you need a lot of context. You need the social shareability. You want to make your one piece of content scale so that instead of reaching one person because you deliver it to your site and it just reaches one person, you want it to be able to reach thousands of people because it not only appeals to one audience, one type of person, it appeals to many people, or it could provide information for many people. And the content should be able to scale. You want it to help your search engine optimization. You want it to be able to run other internal links through to other pages or, you know, whatever you want to do with the content, whatever your objective is, that's what you want your content to fulfill. And canned content just does not fulfill anything, really. It's like, just filler. It's literally filler.
Yeah.
You spend money for filler content.
Content is also, it's not just for consumption. Like, it's not only meant to be read. Content is a very, very powerful tool when it comes to SEO.
Very powerful for SEO, very powerful for education, very like, powerful for, you know, this, that, and the other.
Your content can be helping you on so many fronts if it's high quality with your SEO.
And that's what I mean by scaling.
Yeah, you know, entertaining your readers. I mean, it's just content is such a multifaceted tool for your business and for your audience that...
Hell, that's why we do this podcast.
Yeah,
to have true. Quality, unique content that... One day, maybe we build enough trust or enough brand expertise in this podcast that someone might actually even buy from us from this podcast. Or maybe one day somebody even, you know, they're like, hey, we saw you guys on the podcast. You guys are the business building gurus. You need to take a look at my brother's business. And he's a Fortune 500 guy. Like,
yeah. You never know what this could yield.
Content can build your expertise. Content can build your brand. Content can build your trust. Content can build blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, like you cannot replace original content with canned content. It's just, it's not helping you. Like, you might as well just not be buying the content.
Yeah, it's filler. So, I don't know. That was a little disappointing. And not disappointing in the customer. It's actually disappointing for me because that means I didn't build value for our product, probably. I tried letting them know some information because usually if somebody tells me something, I'll give them some push, right? If they're not online marketing people and we happen to be online marketing people, they hired us for a reason.
Sure.
So, you know, they want the level of expertise. So I tried letting them know, and we have email tracking on our emails, and they never opened the email, so I was a little sad. So maybe I'll call them. We're shooting this on – is this shooting? We're recording this on Sunday, so I'll give her a call tomorrow, and we can see if we can talk about some things. Maybe I can redeem myself and hopefully help their campaign out better.
The CMO liked the content.
Yeah, she really did.
Like,
she
so, did. The person that actually, like – wanted the content to begin with actually liked it just fine. I remember one of those higher ups said that they didn't feel like the audience was super clear, which I was kind of at a loss because I really felt like the audience was pretty clear and obvious. I mean, you're wanting to,
it's mentioned in the first couple sentences.
I know.
It's literally like, if this is for, you know, we're not going to go into who this is or what kind of content this is, 'cause I might give away, but it literally says, this is for blank, blank, or blank. If you're looking for blank, it's like, it's super cut. I think they maybe just didn't want to pay. Maybe they saw that they could buy canned content for cheap and they just jumped on it.
Yeah. But I don't know, but it's tough, but I mean, it's going to be a sales lesson that you'll keep in your back pocket from now on. And
yeah. Don't ever rush into anything. I don't even know. See, like, how could I redeem it? Because she asked for it.
Yeah, I genuinely don't think you did anything wrong in this instance. Like,
yeah.
And I wouldn't be afraid to, like, tell you that either on this podcast. Like,
yeah.
I don't think there's anything wrong with us admitting our mistakes on here. But, like, I actually don't really think that you did anything wrong necessarily. I think that this person that asked us for it, like, genuinely loved what we had. And the person above her didn't. And
yeah,
that's what it came down to. And, you know, everyone's got their own opinions.
Yeah. So sad. That's okay. What do we want to talk about next?
Well, dude.
I don't know if we have a solid transition into
networking. Well,
what do we do with networking? I mean,
how has networking helped us this week?
Oh, I mean, it got us a ton of those meetings. So honestly, most of our mid-size meetings right now have come from networking themselves. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's pretty much right on the money. What have you seen this month or this week?
Our biggest opportunities as a company ever have all come from networking.
So far, yeah.
Like,
even though technically return on investment wise, inbound marketing should be the biggest, right?
Oh, inbound marketing.
But I think we may
I don't think there's like a real replacement for like face to face human interaction. But inbound marketing sure does beat the crap out of flyers.
Yeah.
And billboards and television commercials. You know what I mean? Like,
it's almost in its own league. Networking is another thing.
Yeah. Networking. Almost, you know? Well, yeah. Networking is like,
it's not even marketing.
Networking is like, not even marketing. But yeah.
That might be a good way to think about it, is like, keep networking separate. Like, it should be something like a tertiary thing that everybody should just be doing.
Yeah. I mean, our funnels, like our inbound marketing methodology that we've used it for our own company has yielded like great results when it comes to acquiring small businesses that are looking for just SEO services or like, kind of simple social media, services and help. But definitely all of our biggest opportunities, whether it's with mid to large size businesses, every single one of them has come from from networking.
Yeah.
So never underestimate like the power of like getting out there and just meeting new people face to face, and you'll be like, you'll be shocked with like the kind of opportunities just fall in your lap because you're out there and you're grinding and they know who you are and what you do. I can't even tell you how many times I've had people call me up and I'm like, you know, so-and-so's friend wanted to talk about.
Oh my gosh. We just did an Instagram post. That's good. But yeah, so-and-so's friend wanted to talk. And in fact, this week, one of our huge opportunity that we have, just a gargantuan opportunity that we have, mm-hmm. is, I mean, just hinging on the fact that I've just been friends with this one guy for a while. And we've been talking back and forth, and we've kind of done favors for each other. And all of a sudden, it's like his company actually, I think I can say it. His company got bought out. And we're not going to say what company or anything. His company got bought out by this huge Inc. 5000. They're beast modes. They're the guys that we want to work with, that they want to work with. They are the guys in a certain industry right now. And we have this interesting opportunity that's presenting itself all of a sudden just because, you know, we networked, we were friends with somebody, and we maintained a relationship with them, and the opportunity arose where we might be able to work together, and all of a sudden we have a nice snazzy meeting set up in like a week and a half. So,
and I think the takeaway from that's obvious, which is for all you young bucks who are in your, you know, late teens, early 20s, or you're just graduating college, do not let your college friendships fade off into nothing. Like, you never know who that dude you sit next to in class is going to turn out to be, you know?
Plus, it doesn't take much to send a text message to somebody.
No, hey, how Facebook things going? Happy birthday. Or
just like sharing something simple, or, you know, just keeping professionally engaged with people and then also just staying friendly with people. Think of, and actually this might be worthwhile to go into for a minute. It was based on a prospecting method that I was reading about, but some people, what they do is they find people on LinkedIn that they want to interact with.
Yeah.
And then once they have asked them, you know, a couple professional questions, once they're comfortable, they add them on Facebook because then they're friends with them. And in fact, some CMOs that we work with are actually friends with me on Facebook. And that makes me feel pretty good now that we're talking about it. So, and, you know, of course, you can like their stuff and, you know, their personal life and see their kids and see how everyone's doing. And it's like, oh, my God, you like Boston? I love Boston. You should check out AC/DC sometime. It's like, no way. I have two tickets for AC/DC. It's like, you know, all of a sudden you're chewing the fat, whatever the expression is. All of a sudden you're chewing the fat with, you know, one of your clients, and then that's how you have a lifelong partner in crime, I guess, in growth.
Yes.
Yeah. Not crime. We don't want crime. We want growth. So, I don't know. It's kind of interesting. Facebook. Keep with your people. Don't burn your bridges.
Yeah, like stay connected with all your college friends. Like, and really.
Don't
like,
be afraid to give free stuff out, too, sometimes, I guess. Even if sometimes it's a pain in the butt and it doesn't seem like it's going to pan out. Because, I mean, we gave them free website and, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah. It's, I don't know. Things will pan out. Things will pan out.
Yeah. So. Absolutely. And honestly, this is a great segue into the way that our social campaign has been going this week. Dude, so
jeez.
So I wouldn't say we've had any turbulence with our social campaigns, but there's one thing that I really wanted to talk about today, and that is like not being afraid to pivot your campaign for your client if things aren't just working out the way you know you thought it would, you know. So
or the way they thought it would, you know?
Yeah, or the way they thought it would. So we had a client that very much wanted to be extremely active on Facebook. They're a B2B office supply dealer, I guess. They work with like a really big co-op that helps them like compete nationally and all this. So they're doing really well, but they really wanted to build their presence on social media, and they chose Facebook because a large demographic of their customers or their dealings with businesses are with women. And so they'd read about, you know, lots of women be on Facebook, which,
you which know, is true.
Which is true, I guess.
That's why we jumped into it.
You know, and we can target, you know, can target women specifically on Facebook and, you know, the whole spiel with Facebook ads. But it wasn't really working very well. You know, they're inviting lots of their friends on Facebook to come like this page. And I was trying to post like, you know, content that people might like. So they've got like a vendor that puts out a podcast called like Smead Organomics. And they kind of give you like tips on like how to get organized, or like 9 tips to like clean your home better, or like, you know, cleaning hacks or whatever. Just trying to do like different things that have to do with like either office supplies or cleaning products or whatever, because that's what, you know, that's what these guys sell. And what I'm really starting to realize is like B2B sales are really going down in LinkedIn. You know, like last time on the podcast, we were kind of talking about like the crazy ratio of likes to followers on Facebook. So like we kind of mentioned like, yeah, like Pepsi might have like 1.5, you know, million followers or however many they do have. And they'll have like 100 likes on their post, you know. And so you're sitting there going like, I wonder what the problem is. And we're looking at Staples and they've got like maybe like 2 million follows on Facebook and they're getting like 18 likes.
Yeah.
Kind of stuff like that. And I started really wondering, I'm like, if this is what's happening in B2C on Facebook, B2B has got to be a lot more sparse when it comes to this kind of industry. And so I sat down with the owners and just said, hey, like, I'm concerned that this campaign might actually not be meeting your KPIs. And I would like to switch you over to a full strategy on LinkedIn to help you nurture your leads. So this means that I'm running their LinkedIn profiles to add every single person they come in contact with, because these guys are real hustlers. They're like selling all day, every day, getting after it, and trying to nurture those leads and like the content they like and talk to them on LinkedIn and whatever, but kind of do what you did, like what you were talking about earlier, which is you nurture these guys on LinkedIn and then try and add them then on Facebook and kind of like nurture those leads some more. So
yeah,
never, ever be afraid to pivot or to tell your client you were wrong about your initial plan. Because at the end of the day, the best thing for the client is always the best thing. And just because you didn't come up with it at first doesn't mean that when you're a bad agency, I think you'd be a really bad agency to go, well, this plan's not working, but this is the one I gave them, so I have to stick to my guns.
Yeah, I think that's actually the worst thing that you could do. I mean, I strongly feel that a large agency or mid-size agency, even a small business, hires an external group because they're experts, right?
Sure.
That means they're bringing innovation to the table. That means they're bringing expertise to the table. That means they're bringing a whole, you know, other group of facets, all these multifacets that the agency could possibly bring. And, you know, if you settle with just the service that you started with, you're settling with your client, and that's not a good relationship. You always want to be striving for more, right? So whether you're a client or you have an agency that you're hired, that's something to keep in mind. Think of the last time that, you know, something innovative came out of it, or the last time that you saw results, or the last time that they were actually looking out for you. I think it's an important value builder, and it's something that everybody should make sure that they're on top of, especially if they're working with another agency. Definitely look at who you're working with, or definitely look at who is working with you.
For sure.
Actually, that's the same thing. Who you're working with, who's working with you. Yeah, that's the same thing.
That's
okay.
But yeah, never be afraid of pivots. I mean, we made 2 massive campaign pivots this week with 2 different clients. I mean, it's just something that happens. And you're probably not going to put together the perfect campaign for them at first. Like, every single business and every single industry are entirely different. And you just got to figure out how to operate that space with where they're at in the marketplace and the unique challenges and the followings that they've got. And so never be afraid to pivot. Never be afraid to change things up. And always be really honest and upfront and transparent with your client.
Yeah, it's definitely helped with us, I think.
Oh, yeah. I mean, so...
Especially for customer retention.
Well, let's even talk about this. So we've got another client. that runs a very large veterinary company that's expanding like crazy in the Dallas area. And I really feel like at first, this CMO was really struggling with our campaign because she didn't fully understand what we were doing. And I don't know if it's because she might not be, she I don't think she's super well versed with LinkedIn. And so when we were running our campaign and getting after it and doing, you know, fulfilling our contract, she was constantly asking what we were doing. And like, she always seemed really concerned about it. And so, we actually took the time to have like a screen share with her, right?
Yeah. I screen shared her for about an hour and 30 minutes, hour and 20, hour and 15, maybe. An hour 15. Yeah, it was awesome. I mean, I sincerely thought that she like just did not want to work with us. For some reason I had some weird conspiracy theories or something going on. And because she was making like our lives literally difficult. Like really difficult. And after the screen share, we kind of figured everything out. We realized sort of knowledge gaps that we probably could have covered earlier. So addressing the knowledge gaps was really, really smart. Being able to take care of how we would be interacting with them and the kind of results that we could be giving and the kind of results that we were promised by LinkedIn or we had seen the other results from other locations, and it just didn't pan out that way. So we were able to show her like what we saw even before we started their campaign and where we were getting their numbers from, as well as like logging in situations and her two recruiter accounts and how she may have not seen our other listings because of one reason or another. So it was just nice being able to address knowledge gaps, being able to address whatever we needed to address for that.
Oh, and our relationship with them hasn't been better. Like, yeah. So never be afraid to like to educate your client and just be as transparent as possible to help them out. It's better for literally everyone in the long run. And more times than not, we in our experience, when we've had to explain something to a client or we've like kind of been really transparent and like done everything we could to help them understand what we're doing with their campaign, they often will leave you alone and let you do your thing.
Yeah. So once they figure out what's going on, sort of.
I mean, I love talking to our clients, but there comes a point where it's like, hey, like I'm on the phone with you and not doing your campaign.
Oh, I literally was emailing her more than like it was taking more time to email her than it was to run her campaign.
Yeah.
Like, that's not right. That's not okay. So it was better to just address everything.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about that Instagram article?
Dude, yes. So you guys are going to bear with me because I'm actually going to read the article. This is kind of more like an op-ed piece that we found on livemint.com.
Super interesting. And so my family is from the restaurant business, so I'm like super pumped to like comment on this actually. So
it's no secret that social media is actually changing our behavior, right? And so it's even starting to change the way that we eat and how restaurants start to prepare or place their food or whatever. And so this article is how Instagram is changing the way that we eat. Social media is changing and influence the way we eat and what we eat. It is also changing the way that restaurateurs market themselves and present their dishes. Growing up, Sunday evenings outings with my dad were limited to a handful of restaurants. This ritual continues even now when I visit him on weekends. Going out is about comfort. It's a non-fuss. The places we frequent are known to be consistent with their food, menu, service, presentation, and not surprisingly, have been around for at least a decade. Cut to me going out with my colleagues, partner, or friends. I spend hours reading reviews on social media and looking at Instagram feeds to decide. The restaurant of choice is often a new place and then a new meeting at an established one. It's usually about the experience. Social media is changing and influencing the way that we eat and what we eat. It is also changing the way restaurateurs market themselves and present their dishes. It goes without saying that food conversations dominate my Instagram feed. Often I too add to it. I usually take pictures of my food and spend time fussing over the image quality, adjusting the filters for brightness, sharpness, adding appropriate hashtags to post it online. Even before I've even tasted the food, I have endorsed it. I am not the only one. At Farzi Cafe, close to 80% of diners who eat at the restaurant take pictures of their food, says Zohar Kalra, founder and managing director of Massive Restaurants Private Ltd. Farzi Cafe was one of the first restaurants to use innovative techniques on traditional Indian food, coming up with dishes like Miss Dahi, Raj Kachori, and sweet and sour pumpkin mash with chutney foam. If food looks good, you'll enjoy it more, says Kalra, who plans all of his food around beauty. Instagram is a byproduct of beauty, he explains. On Instagram, some 208 million posts have been tagged with the food hashtag since it was founded in 2010. Food lends itself beautifully to smartphone-wielding customers who like to take pictures and share them. Today, for many people, out-of-home spends is dictated by creating an experience. While shopping can be done online, one is more likely to step out to have fun, which could be eating out or watching a movie. In 2016, for the first time ever, Americans spent more money in restaurants and bars than at grocery stores. For restaurateurs who are constantly looking at ways to engage with customers, social media is a boon. At the newly opened Sukasa in Mumbai's Bandra, tweets from customers using Sukasa appear live on a large screen. Some restaurants, the chef at the helm is a social media celebrity with a large following. For instance, at Lower Peril, the Bombay Canteen's executive chef, Thomas Zacharias, has over 21,000 Instagram followers. Then, there are celebrity food bloggers with hundreds of thousands of followers giving birth to food fads like Freak Shakes. Social media has also reduced the cost of marketing. In the food services industry, marketing spends constituted 4 to 6% of the total revenue for the majority of the companies for financial year 2016, according to India Food Services Report 2016 by the National Restaurant Association of India. Costs of advertising have come down, says Kalra, who spends on traditional media like radio and newspaper are now opportunistic. Yet, there's a flip side to social media. The turnaround time for tables increase as people fuss over pictures. Also, not all feedback is favorable, and there is a constant pressure of remaining relevant to consumers who are on the lookout for new experiences. For consumers reading social media feeds, there could be a different backstory to what you see. Earlier this year, I was at Indian Accent, New Delhi, and noticed a group of customers ordering, clicking pictures, and talking animatedly as their food arrived. However, most of the food was sent back largely untouched. On chatting with my server, I got to know the place occasionally attracts tourists who might not be fans of inventive Indian cuisine, but are interested in adding dining experience at a restaurant to their social media feed. Indian Accent is the only restaurant from India featuring among the top 100 restaurants in the world in the 50 Best Restaurants list 2016, published by William Reed Business Media Ltd. Its New York outpost was the best Indian restaurant and the runner-up best new restaurant across cuisines in the city of the 2007 Zagat Guide. The scene also brought to mind a New Yorker cartoon where a waiter asked a couple, "Is everything okay? You haven't photographed your food." Food no longer is just about satiating our taste buds. Increasingly, it's about feeding our eyes and social media feeds. Kind of a long thing.
Who wrote that?
It was
Sapna Agarwal
from Live Mint.
Yeah,
lots of Indian names. Very hard to read, but a lot of great points. Like, what did you get out of this?
Just so much. Like, think this. You're a restaurant owner, and all of a sudden you start running an exit poll on your people. And all of a sudden you realize that 80% of them are taking pictures of your food. That's ridiculous. Yeah. That, like, literally taking pictures of your food and posting it to their entire social network. I have, like, over 900 friends on Facebook. I have over 1,000 followers on Instagram. One of my posts gets 1,000 reach. Easy. Like, that's a lot of exposure. That changes so much.
Mm.
Because now all of a sudden, every person that comes in is a high stakes, high pressure opportunity that you could really bring extra business into your restaurant. I mean, these guys could be basically focusing just on what the food looks like, and they probably get more business than if they're like, oh, you know, the freshest ingredients. Maybe it's not all about fresh ingredients anymore. Maybe it's not all about, you know, micro ginger or whatever, micro parsley, micro basil. I remember that was a huge thing. Now it's like, what if the dish just looks astounding? You present so much food for the value and your just customer base explodes because everyone is tweeting and Instagramming and Facebooking your stuff. Like, the amplification is just enormous. I mean, and all it takes is you spending a couple extra seconds, a couple extra minutes to make your dish look just spot on, spectacular, make it look different every time. I don't know. It's pretty interesting. I mean, we were taking a look at this right before the podcast, actually, and I was kidding, but it's kind of true. People could start just, like, making food plates. Imagine, like, an oval plate where the food's all at the top rim, and then you just have your hashtag, like, hashtag two brothers or something. That's one of my family's restaurants. Hashtag two brothers. And then all of a sudden, everyone knows exactly what restaurant they're at. They know exactly, if they don't put the geolocation, they put exactly the hashtag that they need to be looking at to find the rest of your menu, some other spectacular food that you've put up. I mean, this is just crazy. Like, put a hashtag on your food. Could you imagine?
Mm. Like, yeah.
Squirt it with ketchup or something? Like, who knows?
People are sending food back because it's not social media ready.
I mean,
like, food's actually going back to the kitchen because they don't feel comfortable
posting
it on their Instagram.
Which, I don't know if that's like a 10 out of 10. I don't even know if that's a 1 out of 10 times thing.
That happens.
But the fact is that people are sending out their food. I mean, I've Instagrammed my food before, and I'm like, not huge on posting my personal
stuff. If it looks like crap, I won't take a photo of it, but I will chow down.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, I'm all about not wasting food, but, like, man, the amount of people that do take pictures of it is, like, actually astounding. And it hadn't really crossed my mind until I read this article, but it's absolutely true.
Well, and it's bringing down marketing costs. So last week, we kind of went on a rant about how many small business owners, including restaurant owners, don't believe in online marketing. And this one restaurant is really seeing how social media is entirely changing the game for them. Like, you make a good looking dish and you're turning all these people who have been conditioned into taking a photo for social media. You have turned them into your marketer.
Literally advertisement. It's free advertisement.
It's free advertisement all day. Like, it's unbelievable what you can do with social media. And maybe it's not even all just about your brand. Like, what if you, like, rallied a social media campaign around your chef? Like, think about that. Like, what if you paid a...
That's like that salt guy.
Yes.
Nusseret. Yes. Remember the super extra dude that, like, puts his hand up and pours salt on steaks and stuff?
Yep. Like, when
he opened two new restaurants this past month, and yep, they're huge.
They're going gourmet crazy
restaurants. Like, and it's just because he went viral on Facebook.
Like, I think we tried, like, a restaurant while we were up in Chicago because I networked with a Instagram chef while we were up there.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Like, it's happening. So maybe, like, not just running your social media strategy around your brand and your business, but also around your chef. Like, build that dude up. You know what I mean? And like he's always posting, you know, your content. It's like, oh man, I like what this chef's cooking. I know that I need to go to whatever grill, this restaurant to go. So they're
getting the word loyalty. It's that brand loyalty.
Yeah. They're blowing up, you know, their restaurants because their chefs are becoming Instagram celebrities because they're utilizing and leveraging social media. Their marketing costs are coming down. You're using human behavior to become your own advertisers. Like, and it only takes just making your food look good. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. Like, you can do so much more with it. Online marketing works.
Amplification, dude. The amplification.
Online marketing is changing people's behavior.
Literally, if one person walks into your restaurant tonight, so say you're a restaurant owner, one person walks into your restaurant and they send out an Instagram post and they have 500 followers, 200 followers, say. All of a sudden, that one person just showed that they were endorsing you and that you have delicious food at your location. So it's like 200 people walked by your restaurant to check you out. All of a sudden, that's exactly what happened. 200 people just walked by your restaurant to check it out. Granted, there's some like relevancy things that, you know, Facebook and Instagram have so that not everybody always sees everything on like Facebook. But Instagram, if you're following someone, you see 100% of their stuff.
Yeah.
So literally, it's pretty crazy to think about the advertisement, the amplification. It's just disgusting. It's gross. It's ridiculous. One person turns into 200 like that.
And even on a behavioral level, back again, like, we're seeing more Americans like going to restaurants more than they're going to the grocery store.
Which I believe.
Which I totally believe. And all these restaurants that are blowing up.
Because I go to restaurants more than I go to
grocery store. Yeah, absolutely. And all these businesses that are doing great, all these restaurants that are killing it, are leveraging social media in one way or the other, whether it's making like crazy looking dishes or building up the value of their chef, or, you know, running a good old fashioned social media campaign to let everyone know about your restaurant. Yeah. Like, it's astounding. And I say this very loosely because I've got friends who own restaurants that I very much love and respect. But if you are running your own restaurant in 2017 and you're not leveraging social media, I would honestly say that is foolish.
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 Foolishery. Yeah. No, seriously. You're wasting money. You're wasting time. Get out of business. Just kidding. I love you guys. But no, seriously. Like, you're wasting money. You're wasting time. You're wasting a huge opportunity. The amplification's just there. It's just... like, common sense. Common sense, guys.
And I always hear, like...
And it's easy.
Yeah.
30-second thing. Just put an alarm on your phone. I do it to help remind me to post. Travis does it to help him do things. You know, it's easy. If you're an owner, put an alarm on your phone. You're not wasting your time doing social. You're making yourself more money. You're making yourself more present.
I mean, and I guess a common objection I even get from restaurant owners is, well... nothing's more powerful than word of mouth. I'm like, well, duh. Where do you think the word of mouth is?
It's social media now. That's word of mouth.
Like, no one's calling their friend up and going, you're not going to believe where I just ate. What are they doing? They're posting on Instagram. They're posting on Facebook. Like word of mouth in 2017 is Facebook, is Instagram, is Twitter, you know?
Yeah.
Like, small businesses need to be there.
So I can't remember the last time I hung out with someone and told them about my life. No. Because they know my life. Everyone's like, oh, dude, how was your trip to Cabo? It's like...
I posted about it.
Dude, you saw my whole trip. I posted about it. Let me show you my pictures on Facebook again. Like, I'll run you through the whole thing. It's like they knew your whole trip. It's not like they didn't know. They already asked you about it. They're like, hey, dude, I heard you were in Honduras. How was that? It was great. I saw all the pictures. It's like, yeah, dude. I had a friend literally a couple days ago. We met them for dinner. He's like, yeah, we got to catch up. Went to go meet up with him. I was like, bro, how's Honduras? And he never told me he was in Honduras. I just saw he posted he was in Honduras. It's like, that's word of mouth.
Well, follow this train of thought. In 2017, we are more connected than we've ever been. So my dad and I had this conversation a few weeks ago that he's just blown away by social media because he's kept up with none of his friends from high school at all. Like, probably like a few years after high school ended, he had little like to no contact with a single person from high school at all. But social media has enabled me to keep up with hundreds of my high school buddies.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so every time they see
Hashtag word of mouth.
Right. So word of mouth is actually much more powerful now on social than it ever was back in the day, because each individual person that walks into your restaurant, they are more networked than they've ever been.
Yep.
Far more connected.
Every customer is more valuable now than they were 30 mm-hmm. years ago.
Absolutely.
It's just because you can leverage their networks.
But
that's beautiful. That's beautiful, dude. I feel like we just, that was beautiful. That was theater grade, what we just went through. That was beautiful.
I like ranting with you, homie.
I know, dude. You want to cash this?
Dude, absolutely.
Guys. Oh. Rock, paper, scissors? You want to see?
We always finish each other's.
Sandwiches?
Hey. Guys, we love you guys so much. Thank you for listening in.
Yeah, and to see the repeat downloads is beautiful. We love you guys. That's what I wanted to bring up. We should see if we can get like a survey in on the podcast page this next week.
Yeah, and see like if we can get people engaged with that.
We might try to get a call in too next week. There's a podcast community that I can ask. And
cool.
We'll see what's up. Anyway.
We love you guys. Thank you for everything. Keep listening and we'll keep recording. Love you. Bye.